to America, England. We had no idea for how long and what was going to happen. Baruch Hashem, after Pesach, we were able to start learning again on Zoom. And we're on Zoom now as well. So it's a little bit of a reminder. The biggest difference, of course, is that everyone's in Eretz Yisrael. And we are confident in Yirtzeh Hashem, Be'ezrat Hashem, that we'll be able to soon come back and learn together in person. And just to make Kazlo happy in Hebrew, we're looking forward to that. Right, Kaz? And so, you know, we'll do this now for the days that are needed. And hopefully those days will be as few as possible. And if we didn't appreciate the opportunity to learn, you know, in person without interruption. So now we got a little reminder not to take it for granted. And in Mirtz Hashem, we should be back learning in person uninterrupted. If there needs to be plastic, whatever there needs to be, we should be careful to do our best that we shouldn't get interrupted again. Take a look at the Mishnah here. There's the bulk of the Mishnah in the very last part of the Mishnah. Right, the Mishnah is talking about a case of Shnayim Ochsin, but most of the Mishnah is a situation where there's no Hodah and there's no Edim. The very end of the Mishnah mentions a case where there's Hodah or Edim, where there's Chaluka B'lishvua, which only emphasizes the fact that in the beginning of the Mishnah, the Chaluka is B'shvua. So we see from the Mishnah two types of circumstances, Chaluka B'shvua and Chaluka without a Shvua, and obviously we want to know what the criteria for each of them is. The Mishnah in the first part mentions two types of cases, Shnayim Ochsin and Rachav in Manig. And it's interesting to note that there's a small but important difference between the way the Mishnah presents the two cases. There's something missing by the second case of Rachav and Manig. What is it, anyone?
It doesn't say the Lashon of the Shua.
That's true. But one could just say, you know, it's going back to what we said before. Meaning, when we present the case, Zeomer Kudushali Vezeomer Kudushali, we don't mention the Zeomer Ani Mitzatiach, which is, of course, the backdrop to the Kasha of the Gemara regarding the first case where it is mentioned, where the Mishnah mentions both Kudushali and Ani Mitzatiach. Okay. Beyond talking about the Mishnah itself, course, interesting to talk about the placement of the Mishnah, the fact that the Perek, the Masechta, starts with this Mishnah. The Gemara often speaks about this, which is why the Rishonim ask about it here. Now, here, Lechora, the Gemara doesn't speak about it because, you know, it's generally assumed that Bava Metzia is a continuation of Bava Kama, so it's really one long Masechta. But we still, especially if it is one long Masechta, do want to understand the flow of the Prakim. The Rishonim here connect our Mishnah to the last Perek in Bava Kama. Question is, what connected to in the last parak of Bava Kama, which Mishnah, and which aspect of that Mishnah? So Tosfos, the Balei Tosfos, Tosfos Arash, they connected to the last Mishnah in Bava Kama. The question is, what about that last Mishnah is our Mishnah building off of? Tosfos says that our Mishnah, like that last Mishnah, is about what? Anyone?
Mechoges.
What you mean is Chalukah.
Yeah, Chalukah.
Right, Chalukah, where we have to divide between two people. Right. There are other Rishonim who connect to other aspects. For example, the Tosfos Rush connects it to the same Mishnah that Tosfos does, but a different aspect. What's the aspect the Tosfos Rush connects it to?
Nishpa'im in Oakland?
No, that's the Ritva.
Zewa.
Right. In Hagozel, we're talking about in Yonik Zelos. Here also, the two people are coming Ligzel Zeze. Meaning, Tosfos and the Tosfos Rush both agree there's a Chalukah there, right? The people trying to take from each other. It's interesting that Tosfos and the Tosfos Rush formulate differently how our Mishnah connects with that Mishnah. Is our Mishnah about Chalukah or is our Mishnah about the attempt to steal? And the question we want to ask is, what's the root of this machlokas about how they're understanding our Mishnah? And this is what I mean methodologically, how you connect seeming technical conversations to root questions. The Ritva, and of course in Bava Metzia, there's the Ritva Yashan and the Ritva Chadash. Here it's the Ritva Yashan. The Ritva Yashan connects our Mishnah to the Mishnah before in Bava Kama. Perikud Mishnah Gimel. And he says they're similar in that they're both talking about shvuas nishba venoto. For those who don't know, there's two kinds of shvuas. There's a shvua where you swear and you collect, derabbanan, and then there's a shvua where you nishba veniftar, deraisa, right? It's interesting, of course, that the Ritva sees our Mishnah as a case of shvuas nishba venotel. Rav Haigon seems to have seen it that way too in his sefer on Hilchos Shvuas. Anyone knows what Rav Haigon's sefer on Hilchos Shvuas is called? Sharei Shvuas, Shar Chof. He puts our Mishnah together with the other Shvuas Nishba Venotel. Who else puts our Shvuah together with the other Nishba Venotels? The Rambam. If you take a look here at the first page, he mentions throughout his discussion Nishba Venotel. Pirushim Shnai sounds that way as well. It's interesting in contrast that the Rashba also connects our Mishnah to Perek Yud Mishnah Gimel, but doesn't call it a Shvuas Nishba Venotel. Nakaracha Inyan Domela Yishava V'Yachloku. Not a case of Nishba Venotel. The question is, why would you see our Shvua as Nishba Venotel or not? How does that express how you're seeing the Shvua and how you're seeing the whole situation here? So the first thing we did was discuss the Mishnah in and of itself. Now we discuss the question of the relationship between the Mishnah that came before it as indicative of how you're understanding what's happening in our Mishnah. Any questions before we continue with the Gemara? Okay. Obviously, there's a lot of discussion in the Mishonim, the Achronim here about the Yachloku and the base of the Yachloku. Understandably, we should really begin with the Gemara and see where things came from and come from in the Gemara. And that's an important thing in general, to always go back to the original sources that later sources are building off of. There are two parts to the Gemara in its discussion of the first of the, you know, the base of the Mishnah. The first part is the the kfelut, the redundancy, mitzatia and kula shali. And the second part is how our Mishnah relates to other discussions of Tanoim regarding similar types of circumstances. Okay, let's go to Fiyas Seder. Gemara says, you have mitzatia and kula shali. Why do we have two cases? It's mashma that there's two cases here. Why do we have to mention both? So the Gemara has two answers. The first answer is chaduk tani. It's true that there's two formulations mentioned, but they're really two formulations of the same thing. Of course, the question remains, you know, the weakness with the first answer is, why do we need two formulations of the same thing? And this, of course, lays the groundwork for the second answer of the Gemara, that of Rav Papa. Rav Papa says that the reason there are two formulations, it really is two cases. One is Mitzia, and one is Mekach u'Memker. And the Chiddush is that we need a Shvua by both of these cases. Why would you have thought that there would be a difference between these two cases? Because I would have thought, at least in the Havamina, and the question is, you know, what's the Maskana, that the goal of the Shvua is what? If you had to summarize Rav Papa's explanation of the logic of the Havamina, you could have distinguished between Mitzia and Mekach u'Memker if you assume that the goal of the Shvua is what?
To stop you from being more heter.
Right, to scare someone, right? To scare someone who has some reason justifying to himself to do something wrong. Both of the tzadim are how there's a svara, similar svara of mora heter by each of the cases. Again, the reason this is important is because it helps us understand how we're viewing the shvua, the goal of the shvua, at least in the Havamina. Of course, question is, you know, once we have both cases, what the kamash malan is. Okay. The second part, it's nice to have Yonadav Rimberg here in Shir. He's giving Kazla a run for his money on pencil twirling. Kaz, you better watch out. You got some competition now. I think before it was, you know, it was a one-horse show. You know, that's it. Okay. In any case, the second part of the Gemara here speaks about the relationship between our Mishnah and the other ideas we find in the Tanoim regarding other cases. And again, this also helps us sharpen the basis of our halacha when you have to play it off other cases where the psak is different. So the Gemara begins on Beis HaMidbeis with the relationship to Benanas. And of course, the difference between our case and Benanas' case is that their Benanas does not require a Shvua. So again, we're focusing here on the need for a Shvua. When do we need a Shvua? And of course, the case of Benanas, I assume people looked into it. Shvua staf memhei, the chenveni, storekeeper, has written in his pinkas that he gave the goods, right? The workers claim that they didn't take, and they have the money coming to them. Tanakama says, Shneem nishbayim vinotlin. which is a little bit like our case. But Menana says, Ketzad Yavo Echad Shvua Shav, the Shneem Lochim Lelo Shvua, right? They both take without a Shvua. So why is it different? So the Gemara answers, of course, that here it's not definitely a Shvua Shav, because it's possible that both of them, you know, took hold of the object at the same time. So here we, you know, we get a little bit of an indication of what might be the basis of our halacha, right? It could be that here we need a shvua because it could be that it really is both of theirs. So it's not necessarily a shvua shav. We're sharpening our understanding of the shvua and the basis of the shvua here. Okay, let's move on now to the second case we're playing our Mishnah off of. Maman amutal b'safek. Bavakama daf memvav. The machlokus between the Rabbanan who say amotzi mechaveru ala v'raya, and Sumchus who says yachloku lelo shvua. Again, Sumchus reminds us of Benanas, but the Rabbanan, of course, are bringing in a totally different way of looking at maman amotal b'safek, not yachloku, but amotzi mechaveru ala v'raya. Okay. So the Gemara says, according to the Rabbanan, we have a simple chiluk. Why? Because here we have something we don't have there. And what is that? Anyone?
Ochez.
Tvisa, right? Ochzen. Shnayim ochzen. What's the significance of this achiza? Nu, what's the significance of the achiza? I think there's two formulations. The first would be the formulation of Rashi. You have to read Rashi carefully, but Rashi says the significance of Tvisa is that, anyone?
It's not motzi mechavera.
Yeah, you're correct. But say, Tfisa makes Yachloku possible. Tfisa makes Yachloku possible. Because it's not a motzi mechavera, whatever raya. Right? Rashi, divmaskot tavayo, tapsi. Vein ka motzi mechavera. So we're allowed to do it. One could say more than that. How could someone say more, Moshe Tzvi? Not that Tfisa makes Yachloku possible, but maybe Tfisa makes Yachloku necessary. Gemara doesn't explain itself, and Rashi doesn't need to say more, but that definitely is something one could say. This is the first indication that Tfisa could be playing a role. Gemara itself says it. Right, okay. Then the Gemara says, what about according to Sumchus? Right? Shnayim tovsim bo lo kol shken. Lo kol shken. You should say achloku lo shvua. The assumption of the Gemara's kasha is that the goal of the shvua is to give us basis for the chaluka, right? So there, where there's no tfisa, there's no basis for chaluka, you say achloku without a shvua. Here, where you have more basis for the chaluka, lo kol shken, you shouldn't need the shvua. Again, what's the assumption? The shvua isn't about, right, like Rav Papa assumed. In the Havamin, it's not a steal, right? Like Rav Papa assumed that it's more a heter, and da, da, da. No, we need to give basis for the chaluka, right? Yeah, what we're trying to learn throughout is what's the basis of the chalukah? Why is there a need for a shvua? And we're trying to learn it from the Gemara's discussion about contrasting it with other cases. So the Gemara gives two explanations of how our Mishnah can work even with sumchas. The first is that here we need a shvua because they're toh and bari. Let's ask the same question we asked before. Right, we asked before, how does tfisa lead to yachloku? How does bari lead to the need for a shvua? No, what did you guys say? I think one could say it in one of two ways. The first is to say, when each side is bari, you can't just be say yachloku. You need more basis. You need more basis to say yachloku. You need the shvua to give us basis. The other way of formulating it is not that we need the shvua for more basis, but when there is bari, we have the possibility of getting more basis. So we're hesitant to do yachloku without a shvua. Who says the second approach? Rashi. Let's read Kevin. right? We can't ask for more because they're saying Shema, they can't swear, right? It's not that we need more. It's that here we have the possibility of getting more. Okay. The second answer of the Gemara, according to Rabba Bar Rav Huna, who holds that Simchus is not Mechayev Shvua, even Bebari. So the Gemara says, here it's different because there's no drawer than Mamona. Rashi says there's no Hefsid, no Chesra and Mamon. Gemara says Kal v'chomer, which is interesting that the Gemara brings in a factor which initially it thinks goes in one direction, and now it says the other direction. It reminds us of Baba Kama, the beginning of Baba Kama, where we had similar discussions. If people remember, Kamala Salazek, Kanala Zeka. Okay, we want to understand the difference between Havim and Askana. Gemara says, no. Here the Shavua is a different basis. Even if you say like Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, and even though here, you know, Dror Adamama shouldn't play a role, the Shavua is Midar Rabbanon. Mashma, until now, maybe we thought the Shavua is Midar Aisa. Sounds similar to Rav Papa, but different from Rav Papa, right? It's not a way of knocking off Mora Heter, right? It's a deterrent, but not to knock off Mora Heter, but stam chutzpah, right? We're afraid of people who are just mechutzafim. Not that they have a mora heter, right? Just bad people. This is a shvua to counteract the possibility of bad people, right? And we're just keeping a running tally of what we've seen in the different stages of the sugya. Now, if you're the Rishonim and you're going to deal with what you're going to deal with, this is the, you know, the data you're operating with, and you got to walk away and say, okay, you know, this and whatever else you have, bottom line, what's the shvua based upon, right? Okay. So we talked about the relationship with Benanos. We talked about the relationship between with the Rabbanon and Simchus. And now we talk about the relationship with Rav Yossi and the Rabbanon, Daf Lamed Zayin. Two people gave a pikadon to a third, right? They have a machlokes. Who gave 100? Who gave 200? Everyone agrees you say Yehei Munach. The question is on which part. The Rabbanon say you say Yehei Munach on the part they're arguing about, the Mana Shlishi. Rav Yossi says you say Yehei Munach on the whole thing. And, you know, it's pretty clear here what the machlokas between them is. Is Yehei Munach something we use when we have a suffix? Or is Yehei Munach being used on more of it as a knas? What's the most significant thing about the Gemara comparing our case to that case? Before we talk about the Gemara's, you know, explanations, and what's the most significant thing about comparing it with that case? What's missing in that case that we have in our case that at least at certain points of the Gemara seems that they considered it to be important?
They're not Ochiz in it. It's in a third-party hands.
Oh, John Kaslow. Anytime we need someone to talk about Achiza, we have Kaz. Kaz is going to be our Achiza man. What happened to the Tfisa? Didn't we assume on Beis Hamidrash that Tfisa was an important part of saying Yechaloku here? So we can either say we changed our minds, right? Or we'd have to figure out how that case is a case of Tfisa. In any case, the Gemara says, according to the Rabbanan, we can say that here you can say Yachloku because it's possible that it's the truth. Reminds us of what the Gemara said earlier by Benanos, right? That's how the Gemara reconciled with Benanos. The Gemara says, well, what about Rav Yossi? And here, the Gemara says something similar but different by Rav Yossi. The Gemara says two things, but the first one, the one that ends up sticking with, is you can say that here we can say Yachloku because anyone?
There's an Avada Rami.
It's possible there isn't a Rami. That's different than whether it could both be correct. It's focusing on a different point. The question of Ramos. And here it's very, very important to notice the last part of the Gemara. The Gemara, after it finishes talking about the relationship between our Mishnah and three cases, Benanos, Rabbanan and Simchus, right, Rabbanan Rav Yossi, the Gemara then asks within those cases about the relationship between Mana Shlishi and Chenveni. And it asks why we don't say Yehei Munach even there, because there's definitely a Ramai. The Gemara is making a very important assumption here that I don't know if people picked up on. The Gemara is assuming that the presence of a Ramai is significant even according to the Rabbanon and not just according to Rav Yossi. And that assumption doesn't change in the Maskana. To summarize, what is the factor that brings us to the Psak of Yachloku? So in the Pashup Shad in the Mishnah, the Gemara in Daf Beis Amid Beis, that factor seems to be Kav.
Tfisa.
Tfisa. From Gimel and Aleph, we're mentioning a different factor, whether there's a Vada Ramay or not, right? And the question is, okay, so how do we, you know, and there's two questions running throughout the Gemara. What do we need to say a Chaloku, and when do we say Shavua? I'm just mentioning this last issue because that's the issue we just spoke about. Now, the Gemara in Baba Basra mentions additional factors beyond what we have here. Okay, naturally, we start with what we have here. Did you guys have a chance to see the Gemara in Baba Basra? If you did, raise a hand. I see only two people. My bet is they learn with each other. Shlomo and Moshe Tzvi learn with each other? Okay. So we'll just give a direction here and say that the Gemara in Baba Basra, let's take a look. We won't go through it in depth, but just, you know, we can take a look, right? Zerama Shalavosa, Vizerama Shalavosa. Amar Rav Nachman called Olam Gvar. Here we hear of a psak that we haven't heard of in the Tanoim, right? We heard of Yachaloku, Widishu, Adishu, Ye Munach. What's called Olam Gvar? So first of all, naturally, we'd have a question. When do we say Achlok? When do we say called Olam Gvar? But what makes the conversation even more interesting is that the Gemara there asks on the Psak of Rav Nachman why we don't say Achloku. So it makes the Gemara even more relevant. But what's interesting is the Gemara doesn't ask from our Mishnah, which makes it even more interesting, right? It asks about other cases where we say Achloku. Why doesn't the Gemara there ask about Shnayim Ochsin? I guess the answer was Pashit, right? So it's even more interesting question when the answer should be Pashit to us, right? The Gemara instead asks about two other cases. The first one is Shnei Shtaros Ayotzim Biyom Echad. We have two Shtaros selling a field, let's say, which are both signed on the same day. So who do you award the field to? Rav says Yachloku. Shmuel says Shuda Dedaini, right? The Dayanim, you know, estimate what they think is right. So the Gemara there is asking, when do we say Achlok or Shuda? When do we say Kol De'olam Gvar? The Gemara answers, Hasam Leika L'mekam Ala De'milsa. There, we can't figure it out. The two shtaros are written the same day. How are you going to figure it out? Hacha, by the two people arguing over the boat, Ika L'mekam Ala De'milsa. It's possible to figure it out. When it's possible to figure it out, we say Kol De'olam Gvar. Gemara doesn't explain why. But okay, we have a criteria here, right? Then the Gemara says, okay, is right, people traded a parabachamor or sold a shivcha, and there was a birth, and the question is when the birth was. It's not entirely clear in the Gemara, right, which what we're asking on here, right? Meaning, is it against Rav, against Shmuel, against Zeo Mashal Avosai? Are we asking about Kol Dolim Gvar? But in any case, we've introduced a new case. And the Gemara gives a new criteria. Hasam. We had that mentioned in our sugya, rejected as relevant here. There, each one has drawer de mamon. Each one has a basis for their claim. What's the most significant thing you see from this Gemara about Yachloku? Let's see if anyone can say it.
It's a havamina, even when they're not holding on to it by the boat.
Havamina maskana seems also, John, right? The Gemara here is talking about Yachloku throughout the sugya. In situations where, assumably, there's no tfisa, right? Tfisa isn't mentioned here. Now, part of the question is the relationship between Yachloku by us and Yachloku there, because our Yachloku isn't mentioned there, right? As we mentioned. So is our Yachloku working with the same conceptual basis of the Yachloku there? And there's a much broader question, and what this will conclude is a much broader question. When you have different possible piske halach, right? So here we say based on this, here we say based on that. What is the broader overarching question? Anyone? Anytime you find a
chilek. Is there a preferred one? Is there a preferred one that we would like to go by?
I would say differently, Eitan. Not is there a preferred one, but which one is the preferred one? And in case the word preferred is too strong of a word, you know, editors sometimes use strong words, right? We could say it differently. Which one is the norm, right? Which one is eating nuts at a fat guy eating nuts at a bar, right? Which one is norm? Right? Which one is the norm and which one is the exception? Meaning, is Yachloku the norm and sometimes we can't say it or need to say something else? Or is Kol De'olam Gvar the norm and sometimes we can't say it or we need to say something else. And just to get into the, you know, conceptual basis, why would we want to say yachloku? We want to make peace, right? We want to try and find some way of, you know, why would we say kol de'olam gvar? It leaves the possibility that the truth could happen. It also keeps us from saying something wrong, right? There's advantages to each. It's a little bit similar to the broader question of whether Beis Din should prefer pshara or din, right? Pshara, generally you're not gonna, you know, get the truth. That's the whole idea of pshara, right? You claim I owe you 100, I claim I owe you nothing, we give you 50. We both agree that's wrong, right? But maybe that's better. Pshara. Shalom, pshara, din. That's the deeper question we have here. I remember when I was an early admissions freshman in Rav Willig Shir, there was a fight between two guys about something. They came to me and were like, Willig, so this is a perfect case, a situation where we can have a din Torah. Now, I want to show guys how a din Torah works. So we're going to come to Shir tomorrow and we're going to have it out. So, you know, I came to Shir and each one had it out. Okay, one guy, I think you may know his kids. His name was Shaul Lebetsky. You know, he's a guy, whatever. He was on one side. And there was a guy, Moshe Hakins, on the other side. Sorry, Willig heard both sides. He goes, okay, the next thing the Dayan does is he says, let's try and make a pshara. So Shaul Lebetsky said, okay, I'm happy to make a pshara. And the other guy, Moshe Hakins, said, no psharas. And he bangs really. He was in general the kind of guy who wasn't about pshara. He was a very strong, now he went to Lakewood later. He wrote a Pirush in the Mishnah Berurah. Heard that he taught a little bit in the Krishna Kollel. He was makpid to keep his top button because it sneers. So Mamish, no psharas. So Moshe Hakim became known amongst Achaverim as no psharas Hakim. No psharas. He was a guy when we were in yeshiva together, anytime, you know, anyone would say anything that smacked of tzionis or modern orthodoxy, he had these big boots. He would kick you really hard. He used to call me Saragin, you know, to be mechaper for all those who were saying siz as tuz. He said all the tuz as siz. So, you know, Moshe Hakim's no pshara. But there is a concept of pshara. And that could be part of the backdrop. Okay, so what we did today is we spoke about our mission and our Gemara, and we talked about what we can learn from them and the relationship between the sugyas. This basically is the backdrop to the Rishonim. And, you know, we're not learning Rishonim, we're learning Gemara. The Rishonim help us understand the Gemara. And when you learn this way, you see how the Rishonim are helping you understand the Gemara. And that's what we're going to start with tomorrow. Right? So if you look at the Makorah sheet here, you see exactly what we're up to. Right? We're going to be doing tomorrow Gimel Beis. The relationship between with the Sugya and Baba Basra is how the Rishonim discuss the question here of what the basis of Yachloku and the Shavua is. And Emir Tashem, we're going to start doing that tomorrow. It's exciting. I'm excited. And Mirz Hashem, let's all keep moving toward the goal, keeping our eyes on the prize, keeping positive, and we're looking forward. Mirz Hashem. Okay, Edinger's mic works. Yes, we found that out. Shlomo, you're raising your hand? There's a Sichat Tikha with the Rosh Hashiva now. People have the link to send out to the mass list. Yes.
If in general we say Nishba and no tells that they're a bun, and what's the Gemara's Hava mean otherwise?
That what?
We have a Havamina, the Nishba of Notel Zadeo Raisa. We conclude by saying, oh, yeah,
I don't know what the Havamina is. It could be the Chiddush is what the nature of the Rabbanon is. It could be their different levels of the Rabbanon.
We say a few
could be we thought initially the Shmuo is Nishba of Niftar. There's so many different ways to answer the question. So, you know, when there's so many different ways of asking a speculative question, you know, we kind of cut it off because otherwise, aim the Dover Sof. Some people like speculative questions. And just, you know, roam and roam and roam and roam. When in Rome, ask speculative questions. Okay, Rimberg, keep twirling away there. Keep twirling away. I want you to have a wonderful day. Looking forward to seeing guys in the afternoon.